Hello and welcome to the Weekly Song Podcast, episode 165. If you've not seen us before, this is the show where myself, Declan, and my co-host, Roger, say hello, Roger.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Declan.
Hello. Each write a song and then present it to each other on air and have a bit of a discussion about all of the things that went into it and went into writing it, and generally having a rather marvellous time of it all. So, I've suddenly gone posh for some reason, but we'll stick with it. Five episodes into the season, how are you finding it, Roger?
I'm finding it good. I can't tell if I've hit my, you know, a streak of good writing or if I've just plateaued. But I think it's going well. I've reached a kind of type of song I'm writing now. You know, pulling on themes of like titles and stuff I hear on TV shows and that sort of thing. So pretty good. How about yourself?
Panic. Mostly panic. Mainly panic. I've written my three songs that I tend to write, and now I'm grasping vainly for something else.
Let me ask you, what are your three song types, generically speaking?
Fast and happy, fast and sad, slow and sad. We don't like to talk about the slow and sad ones.
So you don't do slow and happy? I guess that's not really a thing.
I mean, I've given it a go once or twice and it doesn't work out.
Oh my god, well there is that whole thing of like juxtaposing a happy lyric with a sad instrumental or vice versa. I should try that more often. I don't do that very often.
Well, let's see what you have brought to this week's podcast, because I believe it is your go first. So Roger, please tell us about your song, what it's called, and anything else you want us to know before we start. And if you would like to join in some of these hand motions, you're more than welcome to.
You're doing a very fluid robot, you know?
I think my hydraulics are out of control!
It's like watching Boston Dynamics on a trip. But what am I trying to say? Okay, my song this week is the fifth song I wrote for this season, and it's called A Fighting Chance, and it tends to go like this.
1, 2, 3, 4... cannot fight it alone with no direction. I'm fine. Go back to sleep. There's nothing to see this time around. Barely a day goes by without my faith. Something I can take. This is not sacred. I'd know sacred if I saw it. This can't be right. I was willing to hold on tight to see. Give us a reason, 'cause I've got a well-trained. I'd be willing to sacrifice for some new day or a change in season. Give us a chance to fight, 'cause there's a million things we'd like to see. Maybe I left my chance too late to take. These stories till my grave. You ask, is it worth it? Like I neglected something perfect. How did I waste my time? Does anyone ever cross that line? From hope into reason, I've got a be willing to sacrifice for one new day, a change in the seasons. Give me a chance to fight, 'cause there's a million things I'd like to see. Time is seldom what I thought it was, unless you believe what you read about the spirit being infinite. There's not enough to see. What fills the emptiness is so far-fetched and funny. I believe 70 years or so was never enough to sow these seeds. So what was the reason you give us these well-trained eyes that we'd be willing to sacrifice for some new day? To change in the seasons, give us a chance to fight, 'cause there's a million things we'd like to see.
So that was Roger's song for this week, A Fighting Chance. And I'll tell you what, Roger doesn't need a fighting chance to write great songs. He does it naturally. This is very lovely. This is very sort of like very low energy compared to your other ones, but in a very sort of very, what's the word I'm looking for? It feels very earnest in its sort of presentation. Like, I noticed there's a bit of an extended range on the guitar as well, which sort of really lends that sort of mellow sort of wideness to it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you know, me, Ernest Rog, you know, I can do Ernest. yeah, I mean, I guess you kind of have to match the lyric to what you feel. If this, what am I trying to say? If the music has a certain energy to it, and this one kind of has a brooding sort of thing to it, even without the words, you kind of go, oh, the words should kind of match that sort of thing.
Brooding, that's a much better word than the vague ones I was coming up with. That's really the sort of sense you get from this one. So how does this one start? I'm going to assume that it starts on an acoustic guitar. If not, it's made one hell of a journey.
It actually started on the Glockenspiel. No. Yeah, you're right. It started on the acoustic guitar with two chords. Okay, so at the beginning of the week on a Monday, I thought, I'm going to sit down and write and start the song early. And I came up with a chord, which was, you know, great. But
it's more than I ever come up with on a Monday.
So I came up with this chord, which is an A major, which on the guitar I'm playing like a bar chord, but with an open A string, and it sounds like this. However, I'm taking off the note that's being played on the high E string on the fifth fret, so that I'm leaving that ring so that you have two top E's playing, and it sounds like this. And I just played around with that chord on the Monday, and I thought, I like that chord, and that's got a certain almost 12-stringy quality to it, because obviously the B and the E are slightly out of tune with each other, you know?
That's how 12 strings end up getting that lovely shimmer, is that the strings are very slightly out in comparison with each other.
I love that sound. I wish I had a 12-string guitar, but this is the closest I could get. So.
Well, if you buy another one and then put them together...
I like your thinking. Yeah. So I had that chord, and then I called up my little brother, Dorian, who is 15, and he is an incredibly good guitarist, way better than I was when I was 15. And he was playing me all bits and pieces that he's been playing recently. And we were talking about drop D, which he's always in because he's a metalhead. And
of course.
Or lower. So he was in drop D, and I tuned down to drop D, and I was saying to him, I like, when I'm in drop D, I like to play shapes like where you bar the lowest three strings and then play like a third on top of that. That sort of thing. And he said, well, what I like to do is I like to play this chord. And he played open, because he was in drop D. So he's playing open D, open A, open D, and then he played 2nd fret G string. So it's like a D5 with no 3rd in it. And he's like, that's the chord I love to play on open D. And I was like, that's a cool chord. And I said, do you mind if I steal it for my podcast with my friend? And he said, okay.
How dare you? You've stolen a chord. You've stolen a chord.
It's his chord. It's the D chord, and he's Dorian. So, you know, which is a mode, I think. I don't know how to play it, but it is.
Yeah, we know of its existence. We just know not how to speak it to you.
Yeah.
Or play it to you.
So I thought, when I got off the phone to him, I thought, okay, I've got 2 chords. And so I played the open D that he showed me, and then my A with the 12-string type of ringy thing at the top. And I had... And then what I did is I took the chord that he showed me, that D5 sort of chord, and I took the one note that's fretted, because it's just one finger, for those audio listeners, it's just one finger on the G string on the 2nd fret. And I just took that up the D major scale. And I just took that up that G string, and then I played the A after it. So you got... And you just repeat that, and you keep going with that. And then I thought, not only is that kind of a cool riff, I guess, but also it contains a vocal melody too, the whole da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that's where it started.
It's a strong start. That sort of gives you that lovely sort of drone underneath that as well. It sort of makes the part feel a bit more intricate than just like strumming gamely on a D chord for a while and going like, yeah, here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't want to just stay there for too long. And I was tempted to just go between the D and the A, but even that kind of didn't have much movement to it. And I think with a song that's kind of subdued in energy, I think it's kind of good to have some kind of movement just to kind of get it going and get it on its feet. So
those lovely passages where it sort of builds between sections and sort of particularly towards the end of the verses builds to something, the harmonies come in to sort of emphasize it, and then it folds back down almost.
Yeah, it does kind of ebb and flow quite a lot, where it has like energetic peaks and troughs, I guess. But yeah, it was really a case of just matching lyrics to that phrase that I just explained, and then coming up with sections after that. So those verses took the longest time, especially lyrically. However, as often happens, the first lyric came quite easily, which was many a day goes by without my say. And I was like, does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah, I kind of like that. So that was like the kickoff point for it, really.
Is that always that moment where you're just sounding out the first line? You just think, does that work? Do I like where this is going to leave me? Am I prepared to commit to this choice now?
Yeah, because, you know, this is going to be on my tombstone. People are going to, you know, I'll be remembered forever for this one line. It feels like that, though.
As silly as it seems, you think that you sit there going like, oh, man, but if people hear that first line, are they going to turn away? But like the power of a strong line that comes to you quickly, like it does like inform the whole thing. Like, and because you tend to write words at the same time as music, I'm imagining that sort of unlocked like something else to do with the writing.
Definitely, yeah. So I already knew that it had that sort of energy to it, you know, that sort of reflective sort of thing. I knew it would be somewhat self-reflective and that sort of thing. Many a day goes by without my say. So it's like, what's keeping me busy that life is kind of slipping through my fingers and I'm not getting, you know, making the most of the opportunities I have and things like that. And as mundane as it sounds, a lot of it's just about working, you know what I mean? Like, even getting time to write these songs for this podcast is like, you know, you're exactly the same as me, I'm sure. Like, you work all day, and then either you write in the evenings or you're tired in the evenings and you need to recharge so that you have energy to write. And often that happens at the weekends. And so it's like the thing that you like best of all, you don't really have time to do.
Yeah, it's the sad thing of modern living in that work is terrible, even more so than it has been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I work now as much as I did in my early 20s and stuff, but I swear to God I have less time now than I've ever had.
It's just because we're getting old, Roger. we're old and past it now. We can't stay up past 10 o'clock. I need my slippers on by 9:30 at the latest.
Yeah, exactly. It just doesn't work to have your slippers on after 10. Well, that's not civilized. That's not right.
No, well, I'm in bed by 10, aren't I? Nice hot mug of hot cocoa.
I mean, you say all that, but that's not far from the truth for me and for you, probably, I bet.
Oh, no, I'm terrible. I just stay up till 2 in the morning going, like, why am I always tired? And then waking up at 8 o'clock going, why am I always tired?
I heard of that thing recently, whose name I can't remember, but that thing where you stay up late to, it's like, get revenge on the day. Like, this is the free time I have. Like, I'll make the most of it. And you wake up at midnight.
This is not something that is known to me, but it does sound absolutely wonderful and the sort of thing that I would do just to spite myself.
Yeah, it's bad for the next day, but it's good for the night. But anyway, so yeah, the whole thing was kind of based around not really having enough time. And then at a certain point during the lyrics, I can't really pinpoint where, it kind of went from not having enough time in my working week to, like, by the time I got to the bridge, I'm saying things like 70 years or so was never enough to grow these seeds. So, like, I don't know. I don't like talking about lyrics too much because, like, it almost, like, takes them apart and mangles them a little bit. But it's like...
Would you like to just remind us then why you chose to be on a songwriting podcast?
Well, you suggested it, and here we are. Here we are. And I'm very happy. But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes the lyric itself speaks best, but, like, I suppose it's like life is short and there's so much to it.
Mm.
But you only get a short amount of time. So it's hard to make the most of it, particularly when you're working all the time.
Which, yeah, you get that real sense of, like we said, brooding earlier. And like you said, there's a reflective quality, but there's also this real, like, there is a tired quality to it. Like, it almost sounds a bit like a lullaby in places, but like a really sort of... Well, lullaby is probably not the right word, but, you know, like soothing music you play to, like, relax to or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like, I suppose if it's influenced by anyone, it's sort of Elliot Smith, Nick Drake type of thing. Acoustic guitar and a singer type of thing.
You saying Elliot Smith is not a surprise. You are a big Elliot Smith fan.
Yes, and in our regular section later, what have you been listening to, Ian? If Ian doesn't arrive, I'm going to be telling you about some Elliot Smith records I've been listening to, so so that's definitely fed into it. But yeah, it's that sort of a fingerpick thing. There was one trick I did chordally, which I wanted to mention to you, which I thought you might find interesting, that I do in the bridge. So a lot of it's very diatonic, and this is as well, but it's something I hadn't done before. So we're going, because the whole thing is in D major, we're going F sharp minor to B minor, and then we're playing a G, but rather than having the B playing out, we're playing an A on top of it. So we've got a chord like, and it just creates this weird suspension, and the vocal melody is doing that too. So you get this, which is kind of Jimmy Page-ish. Like, when Jimmy Page plays guitar, he plays a lot of chords that you don't quite know if they're I was going to say a real chord or not, but, like, if they're, you know, in key or whatever.
So bringing a bit of ambiguity to the table.
That's a much better way of putting it. Yeah, that.
I must say, like, for those of you listening or watching, the audio suppression is doing wonders. So I have, in the moment, I have yet to hear what it is Roger has demonstrated. But I'm sure I'll be able to come up with something more to say about it once I've actually heard it during editing.
I mean, it's funny, like, we'll look back on this technology, which is miraculous. We can talk to each other in different places. But we'll look back on this and we'll go, do you remember when you couldn't even hear each other play guitar on video calls?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, that was the dark ages, wasn't it?
And we'll be able to, like, jam across video calls soon, I think, where, like, it's in real time.
Yeah, I think it's just internet latency is the thing. You could probably already do something akin to it. The trouble is that no company wants to sell the fastest internet for the lowest price. So therefore, it's not really going to become a widespread technology. That's just how things work. Capitalism is terrible.
Damn capitalism.
In other news, the sky is blue and the grass is green.
Looks like your back had locked up and you were, like, lobstering your way around talking about capitalism.
Whoa!
But as far as the song goes, I can't think of too much more to say about it. as long as it is, it's my longest song of the season so far. It's quite straightforward in a lot of ways. Like I say, very diatonic. It is in a drop key, which is a little bit different. And lyrically, I feel like it has a bit more going on than some other songs. Oh, the last thing I will say about the lyrics is it's another one where I got the lyric from a film or TV. So I was watching a film last week called Dark Waters. Have you seen Dark Waters?
I've heard tell of it. I have not actually seen it. The name is ringing a bell, but I can't put a thing to it.
Well, it's a very good film. I mean, the film itself isn't actually that relevant to it, but it's about a big city lawyer who becomes a partner at a law firm who defends big chemical clients who are also very corrupt.
Is this the one where they're pumping chemicals and it starts damaging farmland?
Yes, you got it. Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo's in it.
Yes, Mark Ruffalo. That's it. I was trying to remember his name. You got it.
I've seen the middle of the film.
How did you just see it the middle of a film?
So when I used to work at HMV, you could watch films in the staff room on lunch. And obviously, because films are quite long, people watch them over multiple lunches. So someone was watching Dark Waters, and I happened to be there while they were watching the middle of it.
Were you... Because you used to write songs on your lunch breaks. Were you writing a song?
No, because Steve was watching the TV.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess that's very considerate of you, actually.
Yeah, no, I know how that story middles.
Yeah, so but it is in the middle, this line, so you probably heard it in passing. But basically, yeah, so they're dumping these chemicals in this farmer's land, and then the farmer is offered sort of like hush money, like take, you know, this hush money. And then the lawyer goes, look, this is the best we can do. Take the money. At least it'll give your family a fighting chance. And I got my little book out and I wrote down a fighting chance just because it's a kind of cool title. So that's where that came from.
Which is interesting that you reverse that really in the ends of the chorus. It's like, give me a chance to fight.
It's one of those things where I really stubbornly wanted to get give us a fighting chance into the chorus, but it just didn't work. So I just had to relent.
I kind of like that, though, like the title phrase not really being like the key thing of the chorus and like it being flipped on its head slightly. So it's still relevant, but it's like different angle on it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But that's about all I can think to say about the song, unless you can think of anything I haven't covered.
I don't think I've got anything to add. It's quite a nice one, this one. Like, it's very, like we say, it's got a very unique timbre to it. Like, I'd be interested to see how you would take this one further, because it feels quite complete as is.
Yeah, well, what you said when we were listening to it about adding a heartbeat as the rhythm in the back is a very uniquely Declan idea, and I think I will do that, because that's a good way of doing it.
It's a very unique Declan idea that he got from listening to Taylor Swift, so...
Well, okay, I thank you and Taylor. If Taylor, as you're listening, which I'm sure you are, thank you both.
On behalf of us both, I thank you.
And we're going to move on to listen to your song, Declan. So tell us about it. What's it called? How does it go? And any other details?
Well, it's called Up and Gone. It is a song. It goes like this.
Much more than that. Those secret summons on the night you left me flat. Boys will be boys, you say, grow up and be a man. You try confessing it is coming far too late. You try to justify, oh, that's a big mistake. You ask for time, but I can no longer wait. See your fingers.
in the wrong here, darling. Surely you must know there's no returning from this. I will let you go. Well, I guess you're used to always getting what you want. Now here's the test, screw you, I am up and gone. Do your worst, darling, or admit you did me wrong. All the best, darling, I am up and gone. There's nothing, nothing you can say that'll save you. Play a game, take the lesson, dummy.
Okay, that was Up and Gone. That was Declan's fifth song of the season. Fantastic song, as always. And I think the first one that you wrote on keyboards so far this season. Why keyboards?
Why not? That's the answer to that one.
Touché.
Yes. I got to the point, basically, where I was trying out things on guitar and I was just playing all the previous songs that I'd written in the season. So it's just like, right, okay, force myself to do something different onto the piano. Okay, that's a riff. Let's go with that.
So you came up with the piano riff first, that dun, 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 that bit?
Yeah, with that sort of descending bit there as well. It was one of those moments where I was like, yeah, feels like probably everyone has written this riff at some point. And today is my turn.
I don't think there's anything wrong with starting with a sort of a style, even if it's a style that you maybe have heard somewhere else before, because then you take it in your own direction. So, like, where did it go from there? You came up with a riff, and then what was next?
The next part was just coming up with the sort of end of the verses, which is just a sort of mistake. I was playing a D over an E bass note and realised, oh, wait, that sounds good. Let's keep doing that then. Ambiguity, baby! then coming up with the chords for the chorus, which, keep it simple, A over C sharp, D, D minor, which that's a very concise bit of movement there. Also, just with the feel of it, like picks it up a little bit, like a bit more straight ahead. And then just coming up with the bridge. The bridge is kind of the odd one out, really, in this song. Like, so the riff is playing on an A, and extending the fifth up to F sharp, down to F, back to E. So you've got that little movement there, and a D and E, which implies the whole thing is in A. Same with the chorus, the fact that you're going to a D minor implies that it's in A. In the bridge, you're going from an E minor to a G to an A, which is almost like a flat major 7, and then almost like the minor version of that, because E and E minor and G are kind of related. And then just that little moment at the end where you go E minor, D, E to get back into it.
Yeah, the trick to get back into your original key. That was cool. And I said to you while we listened to it, is there something non-diatonic going on in the bridge? Because it sounds like it could be diatonic chords, but it's got sort of this almost... it pricks up your ears and makes you kind of go, oh, what's happening here?
The song is pretending that it's in D for that moment as opposed to being in A.
Yeah, sometimes there is that thing of like, there is enough ambiguity of what is the tonal center that you can almost play with it a little bit.
Yeah, which is just fun to do on a section like that, to go, right, here is a section that's out of the normal range of the chords. Let's have fun. I am noticing this all after the fact. I did not notice this at the time. I will hasten to
you
add.
You could go, I know all that at the time. That's fine, you know.
Well, afterwards, I was looking at it going like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. Whereas at the time, it was just like, huh, chords sound good. Me write chords.
I mean, I think that kind of Stone Age approach is probably the most intuitive one, and I think that works great. I've got to say the chorus is my favorite part of this song. Because like you say, not only does it pick up the pace, but you've also got those more driving bass notes in the left hand of the piano part. And it's got a great hook, that sort of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, very like anthemic and kind of like a screw you type of chorus, which I love.
Thank you. Those notes are actually in the bass. What I'm playing in the left hand of the piano at that point is basically just a sustained chord. All the movements in the right hand. That chorus, sort of the made me think of like a female pop song.
Yeah.
And at that point, like the first idea for a lyric came in on that chorus, like, well, I guess you're used to always getting what you want. And it's just like, okay, this song is about to write itself, isn't it? I know exactly how this is going to go. It took a fair bit of writing and like rearranging everything to get it in the right order, and to get the right tone. It's a tricky thing writing a fuck you ballad, or a fuck you song, because you've got to convey your displeasure, but you've also not got to come off as the aggressor is maybe too strong a word, but like
a jerk.
Exactly, yeah, like not like you're rubbing it into someone who doesn't deserve it or something like that. So it's a fine line to balance, hence why there was a lot of rewriting. It's just like, no, that doesn't feel strong enough. No, that's too strong. Back off.
It's like a kind of Goldilocks of songwriting, this.
Well, it's like,
it's too hot, too cold.
Well, it's like, for example, that oh, you're getting so aggressive line, like that's in verse 4. Originally, that was going to be like verse 2 or verse 3. It's just like, no, that's escalating too quickly. You can't put it there. Otherwise, it just makes the whole vibe seem a bit off. Whereas if you put it at the end of like verse 2, it's like, yes, okay, we're into the argument now. This is the point where you could reasonably expect a dickhead to get a bit aggy. And then you've instantly got the chorus there to sort of like do the counter message of like, screw you.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've written a couple of those fuck you ballads, as you call them, which I love the term. I've written a couple of those myself, and it is difficult to kind of like write yourself as like the justified one, as like, I am in the right here and that went wrong. And yeah, it is a lot of balancing lyrically, I will say. Yeah. So like, how did you address that? Like, apart from moving those bits around and that sort of thing, like, how do you paint yourself as the good in a good light?
Well, making things up helps, the fact that it's entirely fictional. The idea is that this is a song for a female pop singer. So the fact that there's this weird like double expectation of gender, like these weird double standards, where like if you had like a male singing it and they were singing about a cheating partner, that would be sort of, it could very easily turn sexist. Whereas you do that the other way, it doesn't tend to ring that way quite as much. So that the fact that in my head this is meant to be a female singer does a lot of the work. It shouldn't, but we live in an imperfect world, so
yeah.
So there we go. But yeah, the fact that you start off like mentioning the wrongs that the person has done. So it's like, right, here are the crimes. Let's fuck about with them for about 3 minutes.
That's a good point. They're messing around with like listing the wrongs, I think, is a good way of doing it, because then you're like, here are the charges, Your Honor, and then you kind of move on from there.
And like also trying to give, because again, in my head, the singer is a fictional person. It's definitely not me. So the fact that they're able to have some fun in the bridge, like, okay, you fucked up, dummy. I'm leaving you. You're an idiot. Bye.
Yeah,
which is not, if I was singing from my own perspective, that's not something I think I could put into a song, because like it's just not the way I process things. But like it's fun writing from the viewpoint of someone else and go like, yeah, that's an interesting way to sort of verbalize emotions.
Yeah, that's like, that's a way some people see life. And it reminds me, I watched this mini documentary on Sergeant Pepper and the Beatles in their own words, like describing the making of it. And Paul, you know, you're sure you've heard this on Anthology and stuff, like Paul was saying, it was so interesting because I had this idea of we could be Sergeant Peppers rather than being the Beatles. You know, I said to John, you know, imagine that you're a member of this band walking up to the mic as opposed to being John Lennon, and you can sing about anything you want. And it just kind of plays into your point of like, if you're approaching it as like, this isn't me singing it, it kind of opens up a lot of avenues you wouldn't otherwise explore, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like it's, we did a season of it a little while ago, trying to write songs in specific styles for specific artists or things like that. And it is an interesting challenge, like trying to consider, it's considering your audience and trying to consider how the person singing it is going to come across. Obviously, when you're watching someone perform, ultimately what you're responding to a lot is the vibe and the charisma of the person on stage, or lack thereof. But it's interesting sort of trying to construct something that someone else is going to have to put their spin on.
It is. And I think that another thing that factors into that is sometimes for me, like, I can get a bit tired of hearing my own self sing about the like little narrow avenue of topics I can write about. Sometimes it's very cathartic, but sometimes it is nice to step outside of yourself, which, you know, fiction writers get to do all the time because they're writing from the vantage point of a character or of a group of characters. So,
yeah, it's also, you and I have both done it before where we've written songs about films or about books or about, you know, whatever it is that we're interested in at that moment. And it's that little moment of getting to see the world in a slightly different lens, even if it's like what you take from a piece of work. Like, you get to write stuff that you wouldn't necessarily get to write about. Like, Redmond Barry does not exactly apply to, like, my day-to-day life, but it is very much what I took from the film, so...
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of my favourite of your songs. And I think it's... Sometimes it brings something out of you you wouldn't ordinarily explore. And also, sometimes it, like, speeds up the writing process. Like, for this song this week... Did you find that once you kind of hooked into, like you said, oh, this is a character, so this is like for another singer who isn't me, did that speed up the process for you?
It clarified the process, but it, like I said, I did have to do a lot of rewriting on this one, lyrically, to try and get everything in the right place and try and get the right tone across. So I wasn't fumbling around in the dark trying to figure out what the song was about. But at the same time, I was stuck thinking, like, okay, this word is weird. Can we maybe change that and put that somewhere else? Or, like, can we, like, move this idea around so it hits better? Or, like, because it's more narratively clear or something like that.
Isn't it interesting how much of songwriting is sitting with a pen and paper or at your computer with no instrument in your hand, just writing and typing things or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer pen and paper just because you get the satisfaction of when you realise you've got the lyrics wrong, you can just scribble them out.
Yeah, and also you get that thing they do in movies where they screw it up in a ball and throw it onto a big pile of other balls that they've discarded.
Oh no, I can't do that. I did that once and my waste paper basket never forgave me.
Yeah, that'll happen. But this is fantastic. Is there anything we haven't mentioned about the writing of it that we should touch on?
Maybe the only thing is that the sort of way the riff came out was like through the electric piano sound, which is why it's on the recording like that. That's about it. Like, I was playing around on the standard piano sound for a while. And yeah, just changing up the instrument style led me to sort of that, which, you know, it works. Sounds like you could do something interesting with it. The only other thing is that in the initial demo stages, this song was much faster.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, the chorus was something like... Like, I was fighting with myself as I was playing it, like, to say, slow down, slow down, slow down.
Well, that almost plays into that sort of almost club-esque, like, pop type of song.
Yes, but it's a bit faster than pop songs tend to be anyway. So like, I was trying to slurp back down into the pop field.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess I'm thinking of more sort of, you know, like a club banger.
Yeah, it wasn't like an EDM song or anything like that.
Right. But yeah, that's interesting you say about the electric piano influencing the tone of the song and everything and the riff. I think it is interesting sometimes when you know, if you pick up an electric guitar to write on as opposed to an acoustic guitar, you might kind of come up with a different thing, even just playing a G major on each instrument, because they might inspire, like, oh, that sounds like The Byrds, or oh, that sounds like Cat Stevens or something.
Yeah, well, like, if you play like a complex jazz chord on a heavy metal guitar, it's not going to sound very nice. Whereas, like, and you're going to avoid using it, as opposed to if you do it on an acoustic, you're going to think, oh, how wonderful, the subtle vibrations of harmony. Wow. That could be a title.
That could be a title. That's a title right there. I know him when I hear him. But no, you're totally right. And I think writing on the piano, it's funny, actually, you said about, because when we were listening to it, I was like, no, even before, I listened to it before and I was like, ah, oh, that sounds like Supertramp. And you were like, yeah, I think because of the instrument it was written on or recorded on. And it is true. Sometimes, you know, the association in your head goes, that's Supertramp, even though it's just because of the tone of the instrument.
Yeah, I mean, Supertramp are a great band. I wouldn't mind being in a band that sounded like Supertramp.
I think the other thing that kind of made me think Supertramp was like, in the chorus, you've got that one low thing going on in the left hand. Yeah, on YouTube, I'm just kind of going like this.
So, like, you're getting into songs like Goodbye Stranger, where they've got like a boom, 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 as the chords are changing around it.
Yeah, exactly. Like one drone. Yeah, with changing chords. Goodbye, stranger. Okay, now I need to just go and listen to Breakfast in America. I really do.
It's a very good album.
Okay, so we've listened to our songs that we've written in a week this week. Now we're going to talk about some other music that we've been listening to. And in our new regular segment, what have you been listening to, Ian? Is Ian here?
Ian, are you here? Speak to us if you can hear us. Hello, I'm Ian.
Oh my god. How are you? I didn't expect to see you here.
I'm doing grand, thank you.
So you're from the north, I see.
Vaguely from the north. We're not going to narrow it down to anywhere in specific. And I apologise now to everyone. Just everyone.
So, you're here, so what have you been listening to, Ian?
You know, I'm just going to let... I can't continue. Oh dear. So, songs I've been listening to.
yes, Declan.
Yes.
You were possessed there for a minute. I'm going to say, when you were possessed by Ian, and you were, well, a medium for Ian, I must say, you kind of adopted the same thing as when you were frozen with capitalism. So, there's a connection there.
Ian and I, we suffer from the same... from the same afflictions. So... album number one that I've listened to, The Raytons, What's Rock and Roll.
Any good?
I quite like it. I prefer the first one, but I do quite like it. Jack Penn, yeah, there's a character over the top at the end. So Jack Penn, Yatty, Matinee.
Nice.
Timberland, Shock Value 2.
You do surprise me with some of these.
I had Shock Value 1, so I had to listen to Shock Value 2.
Of course.
Dua Lipa, Future Nostalgia. This is the one with the remix stuff on this too.
Nice.
The Strokes, First Impressions of Earth.
What were your first impressions of that?
It's okay. I think I prefer the general tone of the others, but yeah, it's quite good. Caroline Polachek, Desire, I Want to Turn Into You. That is quite good. She is a good singer.
Yes, I've heard some of the stuff on that album. I haven't heard the whole thing yet, but... she seems really good.
She's insanely talented. Like, I think Fletch introduced me to her, and I think the band Chairlift she was in. But she also, like, does full-on opera stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, proper opera stuff.
Proper opera?
Proper opera. The Arcs, Electrophonic Chronic. It's basically the Black Keys with a marketing PR lift, and it's surprising how much that does for me.
Wait. You've got to explain that a little further.
So it's Dan Auerbach doing more like retro rock sounding stuff. And the more the Black Keys lean into that, the less interested I am. But for some reason, the Arcs record I quite like.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Adam Lambert, Velvet, Side A. Radio 1's Live Lounge, 2017 and 2018.
Any good highlights from those?
Interesting version of Don't Worry, Be Happy by George Ezra. Stormzy, Big for Your Boots. Royal Blood, My Sharona.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
The Free Nationals, self-titled. They are Anderson .Paak's backing band. And I think, is he on here at some point? Yes, he is. So for one song, it briefly turns into an Anderson .Paak record.
I like the idea of a backing band making a record. Not that they're just a backing band, but it's kind of like the band, Bob Dylan's band.
Yeah, they were asked why it took so long to do their first album. They just said, oh, it's a day job.
Right, yeah.
Dua Lipa. I could have damaged so many of these CDs. Geese, 3D Country. Very good. I did quite enjoy listening to it.
Geese, 3D Country. Okay, I'll check it out.
Geese, 3D
Geese,
Country.
Geese, like the bird, like the...
Like birds, like vicious birds.
Okay, cool.
Ava Max, Diamonds and Dance Floors. Very... Like, her first record is very 2010s retro pop. It sounds like the sort of stuff Lady Gaga would be making at the time. The trouble is that she made it in 2018. This one sort of takes that, but takes one step towards modernity, and I quite like that. Probably says a lot about my taste.
I like that kind of thing. I'm a big fan of The Fame and The Fame Monster. I think they're a great record. So if it's anything like those, I'm a fan.
So, Bo Burnham, Inside, the songs.
Ah, and what did you think of it? I think they're great songs.
I quite like it. I like how sort of structured it is as a sort of show. That's How the World Works and Welcome to the Internet are brilliant. I watched it after the big hype about it. I watched it, I think, some point in late 2022. And what amazed me is that it wasn't actually just a piece of, like, COVID art. Obviously, that does inform quite a lot of it. Excuse me.
Good one.
We'll keep that in. But it does actually have just a lot to say about social media and the way the internet ruins our lives. And how isolated we were from each other and just how broken the world is. And that made me happy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think... he touched on a lot of lyrical topics which could easily be very cringeworthy, but he did it very intelligently and with a lot of nuance. Plus, musically, it's actually really interesting in a lot of places. Like, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I enjoyed. So, Ian, what have you been listening to?
I don't think he's here. He's left. You're not embodying him anymore.
No, he's floating somewhere in the void.
Well, he's not getting paid this week. I'm not putting up with this ever again.
So, Roger.
One more chance.
So, Roger, what have you been listening to this week?
Well, like I alluded to earlier, so for the folks who wanted to hear about Elliot Smith, now's the time. Yeah, I've been re-listening to Elliot Smith recently, but also I've been listening to Amy Mann, who, but particularly her... most recent two records, Mental Illness and Queens of the Summer Hotel, because all of that stuff, all of what it shares in common is it's acoustic, particularly the Elliot Smith records, Either Or and XO. But they're acoustic in a way which I am keen to explore at the moment, which is obviously acoustically written songs on guitar, generally speaking, but there is production around it. And I suppose these albums have been quite influential because I've moved, as you know, Declan, obviously, but for those of you watching on YouTube and see a different background, I've moved and I no longer have access to, well, temporarily, to my drum kit, to my big guitar amps, to things that you need to make rock music. So I'm focusing more on writing with this thing, the acoustic guitar. So I'm listening to records which do acoustic music, but in an interesting layered way with lots of cool production. So Elliot Smith is kind of really ticking that box for me.
That's fair. You're a big fan of his anyway.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, he's a good one, is that Elliot Smith.
good lad. He's a good lad. Yeah. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know his stuff and wanted to check him out, I guess Either Or is probably a good first album. That's the first one I ever heard. And it's one of those albums that just hooked me immediately. And like, yeah, he's very soft sung, but just very interesting, fast-moving chord progressions. Very Beatles influenced, but not in a way where you go, it's just like a pastiche. It's good music. Yeah, what can I say? I mean, I'm not the first person to say Elliott Smith is good. Breaking news.
Yeah. Breaking news. Popular musician is considered good by a person.
Yeah. Co-host of Minor Podcast. Breaking news. Controversial opinion. But yeah, that's been pretty much it, really. Another thing of like just listening to those albums on repeat a little bit. I watched a concert as well on YouTube. There's a band called Utopia, which Todd Rundgren formed in the late 70s, and there's a few clips on YouTube of them all wearing army gear, like camouflage and stuff, and I've seen a couple of songs here and there posted on YouTube of that show, and it's a multicam, well-shot show. I was like, wow, they sound incredible. And I finally found the full 1981 Utopia Live at the Royal Oak, and it's amazing. It's one of the coolest shows I've ever seen. So I watched that as well, which isn't acoustic, but still very good.
Now, all you need to do is take that that Todd Rundgren sort of vibe and turn it acoustic. Yeah. Force the acoustic guitar to live with that.
That's two worlds colliding. And you know what happens when two worlds collide? Take a guess.
Massive disruption to whatever solar system the two planets have to be in. Gravity just doesn't know what it's doing. Mass extinction events. Sun's probably a bit miffed.
you get a miffed sun out of that equation, definitely.
It's like, oi, I'm trying to hold these bodies in orbit here. Could you not?
I'm trying to shine.
Look, mate, I'm the biggest gravity generator in this system. I can't have you guys over there mucking it up for me.
Yeah, in the solar system, the sun is the big dog. You don't mess with the sun. You don't miff off the sun.
You don't miff the sun.
What are we even talking about if we get on to miffing the sun? So that is it for this episode of the Weekly Song Podcast. Thank you very, very much for listening to us talk about songwriting and music and all of the other random, what do they call them? When you're on one thing and then you talk about something else? Digression. Thanks for listening to those as well. If you want to email the show, please do. Please email songs you've written in a week. Please write in with comments, thoughts, suggestions. Oh, we had a discussion about doing a challenge season at some point in the future. So if you have any ideas for challenges we could do, write a song about this or use this as a prompt or anything like that, email the show, weeklysongpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Weekly Song Podcast. We're on YouTube. If you're listening to this audio and you want to see us, we're actually now doing this video-wise. So look up Weekly Song Podcast on YouTube. Subscribe to us, and thank you to everyone who's helping us grow in that venture. And yeah, also check out our duo project. Declan and I have a duo project together, for those of you who don't know, called Schnookums, S-C-H-N-O-O-K-U-M-S. We have a debut album out now called Attaboy, and we're really proud of that album, actually. I think it turned out really good. And you can get that at schnookums.bandcamp.com, as well as all the other streaming services. And that is the end of my lung full of oxygen. So Declan, where can people find you and your music?
Can I just say, you're the first person who has ever managed to split the word Gmail into two separate words.
Gmail. That's how I say it. Gmail.
Gee, we got mail. Anyway, you can find me and my music online in various places. Search Declan Kitchener. And then eventually I'll show up, I'm sure. Google doesn't go on forever. Yeah, Spotify, Tidal, iTunes, all the fun places where you find music. Don't know why I'm waving my arms about like this. If you're on the audio, you really want to get onto the YouTube.
If people are on the audio, they're just hearing a sort of slight modulation in volume like that.
As I'm just getting further and closer away from the microphone, and it's just...
Now that, my friends, is dynamic range. As I've said before, definitely recommend checking out Declan's stuff. What's that EP where it's stuff that you and I recorded together in the very first place we ever recorded together?
Hold on, let me get the title up a second.
Because, I mean, to be fair, it is one of those titles that's not just like the EP, it's like a longer title.
It's called Four Old Songs I Recorded with Roger in This Shed, presented in reverse chronological order.
It rolls off the tongue.
That was my Panic at the Disco moment.
No, that's that and also Declan's other stuff well worth checking out and taking a listen to.
Oh, you're very kind. Highly recommend. Yes, cheers. Much kind. Many thank. Where can people find all the wonderful things that you do, the many things that you do?
Well, I don't feel like I'm doing too many things at the moment because, as I said earlier in the podcast, life is busy. But the stuff I have made is available on rogerheathers.bandcamp.com. I've put out a number of albums which are available on Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp, Tidal, Deezer, Amazon Music, YouTube. I'm going to try and keep going. That's all the ones I can think of. Are there any more? There must be. There's loads more. Pandora. Krubus. Bless you. I suppose so, yeah. But all the places. Because when you upload music into a distributor, which is how it gets on Spotify and everything, you get the choice to tick all these boxes. And there is an option that just says tick all of them, which includes about 25 that you've never heard of, but people must listen to because there's a demand. So those ones as well. Also follow me on Instagram at Roger Heathers, and there's a link there as well to my blog where I publish a weekly blog about music and making music. So that's pretty much it. Join us next time for another episode of us writing weekly songs, and we look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Ta-ra!
Ta-ra!